Welcome to the Sandcastle, the cast for Sansa players. And other players are welcome too. This is episode 6, featuring a new regular contributor on the show, Ryu. I have to apologize to all the listeners who've been expecting a timely 6th episode, but there were a few projects on the side, plus some schooling, plus work, plus a computer reformat, plus general procrastination that kind of got in the way. I'm back to the schedule of one episode per week-ish, once I can figure out how to both get and edit all the sound files I want within that time frame. I'm going to try and solidify the elements of this show by or before the 10th episode, kind of the way a swirling mass of dust becomes a star and planets. As you may have guessed, this music is from Super Smash Bros. Brawl, which has recently released in Japan and will soon release here by the end of the month. Brawl has launched in Japan, and to the surprise of many, Japanese people have been reported to be buying GameCube controllers. Because of this, production of GameCube controllers has increased, although I'm more curious as to how the game would play with just the basic Wiimote. For those listeners who are planning on attending OdaFest this year, there will be 4 GameCube controllers, 4 retro controllers, and 4 nunchucks available for playing Smash Bros. It has been reported that the game has sold over 500,000 copies on its first day, with consistent high sales since. Being the third game in the series so far, Super Smash Bros. Brawl boasts 25 characters to start with more unlockable characters revealed on the Smash Bros. Dojo site, which can be found at smashbros.com. Those of you who are not new to video games might recognize this music as being from one of Nintendo's rival series, and that is because Sonic the Hedgehog has been included as part of the starting lineup in Brawl, along with other unusual characters such as Solid Snake from Konami's Metal Gear series. You can get more info on this game, and even download some of the soundtrack, at the official Smash Bros. Site, smashbros.com. I had made a mistake in the previous article, where I mentioned that Super Smash Bros. Brawl is due to release late this month. In actuality, the release date for Super Smash Bros. Brawl is early next month. With that said, though, there are a few other games available on the Wii that I have strong recommendations for, one of which is Samurai Warriors Katana. Over the past generation, people have had different reasons to love and to hate Koei's one-versus-many slash-fest, set in ancient Japan or ancient China, depending on the title. However, Samurai Warriors Katana is an entirely separate game. Yes, you're still fighting in ancient Japan, and yes, it's still you versus an army of troops, but the Wiimote makes it fun to slice, stab, or crush enemy armies under your fists. You do basic attacks with the A button, and combo finishers with motion controls. For example, you would swing your sword 3 times with the A button, and then physically swing it to send your opponents flying into the background and into each other. By doing this, the game uses motion control effectively, without exhausting the player, as some people seem to be prone to, by having them swing the remote constantly. But enough about that. On to the details of the game itself. From the short time that I've played, there are multiple story modes that they put you through, each dealing with either a Japanese myth or a part of ancient history of Japan. I've never been good with history, but these stories are pretty interesting, especially when you get to battle through them on your own. The character that you play is never given a name. He's just the companion to some famous Japanese character, some famous Japanese person like Oda Nobunaga or Miyamoto Musashi. As you play through the campaign mode, the designers of this game seem to playtest it and go to the point where the game would start to seem a bit monotonous, and then at that point they give you a new weapon, a new melee weapon or a new ranged weapon or a new minigame, a new type of mission to play that makes everything seem completely new again. For example, there are some areas where you travel on rails. It's like an on-rail slashing game. Think Time Crisis with a sword, or with a spear, or with a hammer, or with whatever other crazy weapon they give you. In other areas, you can actually control where you're moving directly with the control stick. And in other places still, there are areas where you just tap up left, right to move forward or turn 90 degrees, like in a board game. Overall, I would say that if you bought a Wii system out of the possibility of using the Wii remote as a sword or a gun or a bow, then Samurai Warriors Katana is a must-buy for you. It's a game that you're going to enjoy from beginning to end without it getting monotonous. And, of course, if you're one of the people that thinks that the game will be too easy because there's hordes of enemies that stand there and get plowed down before you, then just play the game on hard mode. I'd like to make that into a challenge, actually, for you to find someone who hates Samurai Warriors or Dynasty Warriors on the principle that it's a bunch of people lining up to get executed, and have them try to play through the game on its hardest mode. If you can upload a YouTube video of that, I'll find a way to give you a prize of some sort. Don't expect anything huge for a prize, though. The best thing I have that I can give away would probably be, I don't know, some of the promotional Yu-Gi-Oh cards that I got while I was collecting the game. I'll probably think of something better by the time this challenge is answered, if it is. But anyways, yeah, Samurai Warriors Katana. Check it out. The other game that I wanted to recommend is a very twisted idea turned into an incredibly fun game by a creator named Goichi Suda, or Suda51 as he's known in the Western Hemisphere. Suda51 created this demented game in the previous generation. It was called Killer 7, and it's an action title similar... it's an action horror title, actually. Similar in control scheme to Resident Evil, where you hunt down members of a terrorist group known as Heaven's Smile. And they're called Heaven's Smile because right before, they're all basically suicide bombers. And right before they explode, you see this demented smile on their faces and you hear this insane laughter. The game didn't sell nearly as well as it should have, but it was incredibly innovative, enjoyable, and it was a game that made you think. And it's because of that that I'd like to promote No More Heroes as much as I can, because it is the same type. It's a very stylish game that breaks new ground in the way that games are, in the way that games tell stories, in the ways that they're played, and in what games can and cannot do. It would be difficult for me to go into this game, to go into detail in this game without spoiling anything, because it's made up of a bunch of little stories, so I'm afraid that if I say anything, I'll spoil one of those stories. So, for more info on this game, you could look up some online videos. There's a bunch of excellent online video reviews of this game, by Game Trailers, by IGN, I don't know. Or, if you're willing to try it out, definitely give it a rental. And if you've got the cash to spare, just pick it up. You won't regret it. The virtual console feature for this episode is Light Crusader by Treasure. When you think of the developer known as Treasure, RPGs are not the first thing to come to mind. You more likely thought of Gunstar Heroes, Guardian Heroes, Radiant Silver Gun, or Ikaruga. I was shocked to find out that not only had Treasure developed an RPG, but it was done in the Genesis era, which would, relatively speaking, be shortly after their first game, Gunstar Heroes. Of course, I downloaded it the first chance I got. Now, as far as RPGs go, Light Crusader isn't exactly the best, especially when you put it up against the bigger-named RPGs of that time. However, if you think of it as sort of an RPGized version of Gunstar Heroes, then the appeal is there, as the weapon-mixing system of Gunstar Heroes is present in the magic system of Light Crusader, the sword-fighting system is unique, and the puzzles are challenging without being extremely difficult. I haven't played that much of it so far, but I would recommend it to fans of Gunstar Heroes who like RPGs.
Hello, I am the virtual Uber Nerd. Pumio had asked me to finish the Sandcast for him as his voice has forcefully gone on vacation for a while, and...
Talking like this...
will do more damage than good. We have a new segment on the show, entitled, Ask a Genuine Japanese Person. For this segment, let me welcome a new regular, Ryu, to the show.
Just so I know, I've got your permission to use this on the Sandcast, right?
Yeah, okay.
Okay, cool. Oh yeah, if you don't want to use, like, if you don't want your real name to be known, then I'll use, I'm known as Cumulative.
Okay.
So, what do you want to be called?
Just call me Mr. R.
Mr. R?
Just call me Mr. R.
You must have a name that you use.
I do, but so many people know me with that name that it's become my name almost.
Ah.
Yeah, so it's not very good.
Hmm.
I'm not saying everybody knows me.
What name did you give yourself in Dragon Quest Monsters?
My Japanese name.
Oh.
you see my dilemma.
How about just Ryu then?
Ryu?
Yeah.
Sure.
It's like, besides, Ryu is used by so many people, both Japanese and non-Japanese, that it could be anyone.
Right.
We opened this segment with a short sequence about those little Japanese beads known in popular anime and video games as
Magatama. You know what Magatama is, right?
Beads the whole
Magatama is from Japan, from the island of Japan, although I don't think metal was very popular back then.
Well, it must have been hard to work with.
Yeah, well, probably. I'm pretty sure they still used rocks as hammers and stuff.
Mm.
But, yeah. And that was when a lot of jewelry came to be Magatamas.
Hmm.
What
did they make them out of?
Magatamas?
Yeah, did they start them just making them out
jewels
of clay?
And clay. So they used the really...
Well, I can't imagine them, like, working jewels with stone hammers.
That I don't know, actually. But I do know there is some jewels mixed into it. Hmm. It's not like they didn't know about jewels, period.
So just, like, stuck little bits of
it? Yeah, I don't think it was, like, polished, cut, angled, or anything.
Yeah.
It might have just been stuck on kind of thing.
Yeah.
But Magatame, you know, you've researched this, right? You know, don't
well,
you?
Well, no, I haven't researched Magatamas and such.
Oh, it's shaped like that?
As a nine, yeah.
Yeah, almost like a nine.
I've only seen them in, like...
Because that's how the Buddhism, that's how Japanese people believe what the soul physically looks like. When you look at it, it looks like that with a tail, and when it floats around, it's all squiggly kind of thing. That's what basically is. I have a Magatama, too, at home, like my own kind of thing, right? I always keep it close to me, actually.
There's a, there's a Shimegami Tensei game that features Magatamas.
Yeah.
You like, eat the things and they teach you spells. Well, you don't really eat them. It says that you ingest them, but you can just sort of, like...
Swallow it?
You just sort of take it out and pop another one in whatever
it's
you
like
mean.
Like candy?
Well, it's weird. It's like, they don't show them as beads. They show them as little, angular dragon-type things.
Oh, like, animified, basically, isn't it?
Kind of just given, they look really painful to eat.
This one is very, I can taste cutting.
I'm learning cutting spells.
Yeah, that's pretty. It's like what Ralph said. What was it? It tastes like burning.
It tastes like burning.
Fire tastes like burning.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a Phoenix Wright game where you use a Magatama to read people's minds.
Oh, really?
Basically, whenever someone has, like, repressed memories,
yeah,
or something, some kind of secret they want to keep from you, you'll see, like, this big, like, the background will turn dark and there'll be these chains going across the screen everywhere, and then a whole bunch of locks will show up.
Yeah.
And then you bring out the Magatama and you go, "Take that!"
And it breaks all of it.
Well, it sort of gets them open to talking about the thing that they don't want to talk about.
Yeah.
And then you have to show them evidence that shows that you already know a little bit of what they're not telling you.
Oh,
and then
okay.
Once you show them that you know enough, then they'll tell you the rest.
Right, right. Well, that's cool. Yeah, no, Magatamas, Japanese people hold it dear to them. It's just...
From that point, The conversation had turned to the ever-popular topic of racist slurs. Here's how that went.
The only place, okay, that I have heard this racist terms go on is in Japanese rap. A few bands that do that.
Oh wait, there's also Eurobeat. The infamous line, "Not a danger, not a blacky stranger."
That I haven't heard.
Oh. It's in a song called "Night of Fire." It's very popular.
Night of Fire.
Yeah,
that one. I didn't know the lyrics.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, because it was so fast and it's pretty bad. It's not bad, but it just kind of went right over my head. I'm like,
yeah, they're rather nonsensical.
Yeah. So, did they actually mean like a black person, or did they mean like a shadow?
Who knows. It's just the words. They can be interpreted either way, really.
I shouldn't say. Okay, let's fix this up here, because I was about to make another misinformation. I listen to Japanese rap here and there too. Most of it are not like that. There's no, absolutely no profanity like that. It's all about what's going on in the world, the politics, what.
That's what J-rap is?
There's most of the Japanese rap is about that kind of music.
On to the actual questions. Someone had asked about the news regarding Japan catching dolphins. Here's Ryu's reply.
Okay, some people are wondering, what's up with Japan slaughtering the dolphins? Okay, first, it's not all of Japan. Most of the people, I mean like 99.89%, maybe even less than that, they don't support slaughtering of the dolphins. We don't eat dolphins. My family has never eaten dolphins. My relatives have never eaten dolphins. We don't eat dolphins. Just like all Canadians don't eat prairie oysters. You guys don't. I've never met somebody that eats bull's testicles. You could eat all the, there's so many parts on a bull, or, you know, calf, whatever you call it, a cow, you could eat. Why specifically the testicles, the balls, right? Japanese people are like that too. There's only a tiny select few that eat the dolphins. And my family doesn't support it. My relatives, my cousins, my friends in Japan, none of us support it, right? It's, at the same time, I'm not going to say who it is, but I had an argument with this girl. Again, I was minding my own business, and she came up to me and said that, you know, oh, what do you think about your own country slaughtering dolphins, right? Well, I think a lot of people are forgetting that Canada isn't so innocent either. A north part of Canada, in a yearly basis, they slaughter seals. And everybody's probably, at one time or another, seen the pictures of one guy holding a, like, something that looks like a club, ready to split open a seal's head, a cute seal's head, just like a cute dolphin. And I know for a fact, not most of the people here don't support it. Nobody in Japan thinks, oh, all of Canadians like to bash seals' heads. But for some reason, a lot of Canadians think every Japanese person likes to eat dolphins. It's like, what the heck? How ignorant can you be, right? I'm sorry if I'm being really harsh, but we don't like killing or eating dolphins. It just, every country has some weird, what do you call it, what, niche or cliche or whatever?
A niche.
Yeah, every country has a weird niche.
Well, that's all we have for this segment this week. I would volunteer to do the RPG segment as well, but Cumulative has decided that I sound like an idiot, and would rather wait until his voice returns to do it.
And through the magic of time-lapse recording, my voice has returned somewhat. Before I begin this episode's RPG session, I'd like to explain a few abilities you have at the beginning. When you start out, like in most RPGs, you're at level 1. What this means is that in one move, you may do each of the following once. In the context of combat, you may defeat one minor enemy, or occupy two minor enemies, causing them to turn their attention towards you. Minor enemies are any enemies that I don't specify as being not minor enemies. For example, player characters are not minor enemies. One more thing to note, I had gotten character Kiri's move last episode, but unfortunately due to the hardware crash, I lost the audio. But I do remember the move, which I will attempt to detail in this episode. With that said, on with the story. When we last left the game, a group of bandits had been forcefully looting and pillaging a tavern, previously within which you were restfully spending the evening hours. Kiri managed to easily dispatch one of the bandits before standing up to take on the others. The group of bandits as a whole hasn't noticed the uprising yet, and the rest of you are still amongst panicking villagers and rather annoyed adventurers, and one vigilant Kiri. The evening patrol soldiers would undoubtedly be on their way, but for the moment, all is chaos around you. For this session, Kiri has gained one experience point, leaving two more to level up. Once level ups and new abilities have been gained, I'll explain them here so that you'll be able to use them immediately on your next moves. For now, however, this episode's RPG session is done. That about wraps things up for the sixth episode of The Sandcastle. I hope you had as much fun listening to it as I had recording it. Except for the voice troubles, that is. I do have an idea for a separate audio show type thing which will run alongside The Sandcastle. This idea has probably already been done, or it'll probably be stolen once this cast becomes more popular, but the new segment will at least bring a new type of thing to the audio entertainment world. Samples of the Super Smash Bros. Brawl music are from the Smash Bros. Dojo, linked to from GoNintendo.com, where occasionally samples of OSTs from upcoming games can be found, alongside their regular news, reviews, and a rather entertaining weekly podcast of their own. Music for the Light Crusader sequence was messily recorded from the game Light Crusader for the Genesis on the Wii Virtual Console. Also from Super Mario Land, the particular mix of which was a real schmindrick to find because it had to be ripped from a Flash file, and I had no idea which method would yield the highest quality. The mix is called Heavy Mario Land, and it was briefly posted on VGMix.com before the site got completely splorked by, I don't know, the ravages of time or something. Until next time, stay healthy, heroic, and hypermanic. And if you would like to participate in asking our genuine Japanese person a question, or if you would like to participate in the RPG and make a move for your character, then send your audio input to qmulative@podomatic.com. That's qmulative@podomatic.com.